oh, that person has a green thumb.
This phrase should actually be avoided in modern society.
Come on, Jimothy.
I didn't know it was bud, duh. Yeah. I thought it was butta.
Seed bunny.
No. And this is where it gets interesting because the phrase has actually changed over time.
The salad days of 5 years ago pre-COVID were amazing.
Oh, see, goes home. Guess what this guy at the garden center said.
Real barrel.
Welcome back to the Helpful Gardeners podcast. Welcome, Green Thumbs. We are talking about those common terms that you might hear in or out of the garden. Maybe there's a phrase that sort of has like a plant-esque feel vibe to it. We're going to be talking all about that. A local radio station actually got me on the idea of this because they do like an etymology segment and they go and cover all of these different phrases that are used. And some of these are really interesting how some phrases will change over time to mean something completely different. And so I thought about putting that energy into the garden.
And common words we use, one I always love is like, it comes from two separate Greek words it's got its roots in Latin or something. And it's really interesting.
Yeah. And I think I found a really nice diverse set of words today. But let's just kind of start off with that green thumb phrase, because that is probably the most common gardening phrase we hear. Hey,
I think that is one that even if you are not a gardener, you've never gardened, you have no interest in garden, you recognize it.
Exactly.
It's if somebody's like, oh, that person has a green thumb, you instantly know that they're referring to they are good with plants, they grow plants, whatever, however you might get there, but you understand it is plant-based.
Exactly. And the origin of that phrase is said to have come from like the 1900s, referencing the green stains that growers would get from handling plants. And there was even a Scottish novel called The Mrs. Make-Believe by Mary Stuart Boyd that said, what old wives call green fingers, those magic digits that appear to ensure the growth of everything they plant.
I have done enough work on some days where all I'm working on is plants. Because sometimes when you're landscaping, you're not really working so much on plants. You're turning the soil or you're installing a rock garden or something. And there have been days where, my hands are stained green.
We get stains everywhere else, too. I mean, we're rolling around in the grass. We get stains on our clothes.
Grass stains,
We get grass stains. But for some reason, it's the fingers. So did you grow up knowing it was green fingers or green thumb?
Always green thumbs.
Interesting, because there was a little corner of the internet that said that the UK pronunciation was green fingers.
Nope, green thumbs.
So it was always green thumbs. Okay,
you can travel 30 miles in England. Words are not the same, pronunciations aren't the same, and the accent is different. So maybe that's a more southern term. Maybe they use that in London, but I was from northern England and we used green thumbs. So whenever I tell people about England, Jenny and Harry still laugh about, and you'll see it when you go there this year. But there are expressions that you think, you're like, oh, okay, that's what we use. You go somewhere else in England and use that expression, they have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay. Maybe I'll bring green fingers around.
Yeah. See, drop that into conversation.
Yeah.
And see where, I mean, Henry VIII wrote a famous song called Greensleeves.
That's right.
Yeah. I don't know if that has anything to do with gardening. I mean, maybe he was like, you know, elbows deep in his garden and he was like, oh, I've got greensleeves. And I was like, do, something like that. I'm not very musical.
Now I'm looking it up. What are greensleeves?
Wasn't a good guy.
It had sexual connotations. So we'll leave that. We'll just go right past that.
I'm glad I brought that up and put that out there.
If you would love to look up greensleeves, I highly, as an aside, just on your own computer.
You do you. It won't be in the show notes.
No, but and not safe for work.
We're good. We'll move right on.
So I brought out 10 gardening phrases. There are so many. So I just kind of came up with 10 of my favorite. What I would love to do is with each one, I'm going to say it. And then you just give me your initial thought of what it means and possibly where it came from. And
I thought we were going to discuss some. I didn't think you were going to test me and give me a lightning.
I'm going to totally do all of it. It's a variety show.
Okay. I'm going 10 for 10.
Okay. So starting with the first one, kind of easy. Touch wood or knock on wood.
It's a superstition for luck. If you're going to do something, knock on wood. I would say it comes from a pagan ritual to invoke the spirits of the old forest gods to help you with the task.
Okay, you're very close, actually.
Oh, I'm taking the point. I'm taking 1 point.
So yeah, you're right. It is to avoid bad luck. But the reason why it's wood is because in mythology, there's a really tight relationship between trees and good spirits. And then even the ancient Celtics believed that the spirits lived in wood. And so to promote good fortune, you tap on wood to alert the good spirits that you're there.
I think I got the point for that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's pretty close.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. I like this game.
There we go. Okay.
Okay, so no, we're starting off strong. We're good.
Number two, to call a spade a spade.
Okay, I know that means to be pragmatic with speech, to say something exactly how it is. If I may use another gardening term, to not use flowery language.
Oh, there we go. Oh, I should have put that one on there.
I think it would come from the fact that when you look at garden tools, there's shovels and there's spades and there's garden trowels, and people use the wrong terms. And you're like, I said spade, man. Just call a spade a spade. That's where I would go with.
It's interesting because this phrase should actually be avoided in modern society. They say it actually relates to a racial slur. So we should actually stop saying something like that.
I never even
thought about it.
To me, it was always a gardening term.
Yes, exactly.
And that's where it came from, is that like, it's a spade, call it a spade.
Exactly.
It's a trowel, call it a trowel. That's why I went there. Yeah. Well, I learned something and I will be dropping that expression.
Exactly. Same.
Yeah. Super easy.
Number three, to make a mountain out of a molehill.
Okay. So that means to be overly dramatic and make a huge problem with something that really didn't need that reaction to it.
Yeah.
I would say it comes from if you have moles in your garden and you're trying to get rid of them and you're digging the garden up, trying to catch these little critters that are absolutely adorable.
Unless it's
a blind, naked mole rat. They have a purpose, but I wouldn't say they were adorable. And by digging up your garden, you're creating this huge pile of earth on top of this very small molehill, and you're creating a bigger problem from something that really didn't need that reaction.
Wow, what an event. So the phrase actually dates back to the 1500s when Nicolas Hugal translated Aramis's collection of Greek and Latin proverbs, including the one called Ode to a Fly. And that work was comparing an elephant to a fly, but then Udall added the molehill line. And so the line goes, the Sophistes of Greece could through their copiousness make an elephant of a fly and a mountain of a molehill. And it's interesting because that mountain of a molehill wasn't in the original, but then the guy who translated it just added it.
And how are you going to prove him wrong if you can't read the original?
I know. And nobody knows why he added it.
Yeah.
They just were like, they just thought maybe he had a problem with moles, like you said.
I prefer mine, so I'm taking the point. Mine makes more sense than his. And I didn't lie about translating.
Just goes to show that they've had the same gardening problems that we've had.
Yep. Instantly relatable.
Yeah. Yeah.
You
exactly.
Understand what it means.
Yeah. Like, what would you say would be like, oh gosh, like if I was to say right now, to make a mountain out of a molehill, like, have you ever used that phrase before?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
have you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I've used so far 3 for 3 on using the phrases.
Yeah. Oh, seriously.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. Number four, a shrinking violet.
Okay, shrinking violet normally refers to somebody who is shy or doesn't handle hard situations well and kind of backs away from things. Mm-hmm. I would say it comes from like violets in the garden, and they're growing, and when it's sunny and when it's beautiful and when it's very clement weather, they're thriving. But the moment it gets a little adverse or hard, the flower curls up and withers and the plant gets smaller and it doesn't have the robustness to survive. And that's where we get shrinking violet from.
That's a very interesting take on it. It's actually really similar. You're right. It does stem from actual violets. They're small, they're delicate. They often hide beneath, you know, larger plants and woodlands. And when I was looking it up, they were like, you know, it just means that you like to live a quiet and non-confrontational life. And that's okay.
Oh, yeah, I have a shrinking violet, somebody who does not want to be involved in drama or conflict.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I wish more people on the internet were shrinking violets.
I know. I'm like, I don't think I've ever used that phrase, though. Like, I don't even know how I'd use it.
I've never heard it used pleasantly.
Yeah.
Okay. I've never heard it be like, oh, no, like, he's a good guy. He's a shrinking violet. It's always used as like, almost like comparing somebody to being a coward.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, somebody who like, oh, there's confrontation. Don't rely on them. They're a shrinking violet.
Oh, okay. I see it. So you wouldn't say, oh, Jimmy is not a shrinking violet.
No. It's I've never heard it used yet on the reverse.
Which, by the way, can we just give a shout out? I'm so sorry. Shout out to one of our listeners, Holly, who messaged us on Instagram this week at Golden Acre Garden. And she was commenting on our web episode last week. And she said, great episode. The greatest takeaway was the fact that Jimmy is a dog.
Yeah, not a toddler.
She thought it was a toddler. And it just goes to show, like, yeah, we always talk about Jimmy, but we always forget to say, like, hey, my dog.
Yeah. I'm normally like, oh, yeah, Jimmy does this.
Yeah, Jimmy does this. Yeah. That's so funny. No, Jimmy is a dog.
Yeah, Jimmy is a dog. And in case anybody is wondering, he is part Border Collie and part Great Pyrenees mountain dog. And he is a character. He is phenomenally intelligent and we love him dearly. And he is with us nearly all the time. He goes on all of our adventures and whatnot, which is probably why I talk about him the way I do.
But
we talked all about the polar vortex and the damage it did in the garden. And the biggest takeaway was that Jimmy was a dog.
No, we need to pop a picture of Jimmy in our show notes.
Well, someday, maybe when we're doing the video, Jimmy could be a guest host.
That would be even better. So as a teaser, head online at goldenacre.ca /blog and then check out our latest blog post. So it's the show notes of everything from today's episode. And then we'll pop in a picture of Jimmy so you can see him.
Yeah. Meet Jimmy. Okay. So am I 3 for 5? I'm taking some points.
I think so.
I'm taking them.
Okay. Here's the next one. To nip in the bud.
Okay, to nip something in the bud means to stop the action quickly. Mm-hmm. And I would say that comes from a gardening practice of if you want to stunt the growth on certain plants or you don't want them to necessarily blossom, you nip the buds off.
Yes, exactly. So, prevent a problem from growing worse by dealing with it in an early age.
Yep.
Here's my question, though, because I was looking this up. I always thought it was to nip in the butt.
Oh my God.
I didn't know it was bud. I thought it was butta.
Yeah, you're not alone. I've actually heard a few people say that where the first time I heard somebody say it.
Yeah.
Because there's certain ones that I'm like, did they just say what I think they said?
Yeah.
And it was a friend of mine back east and she would use the expression all the time. And I was like, are you saying nip it in the butt? And she was like, yeah, like you nip it in the butt. And I'm like, but... Okay, great. No, I understand that. But how do you think nipping something in the butt means stopping a problem? Normally, you nip something in the butt, you get a reaction. It doesn't stop anything.
That is exactly how it's. And I feel like that's maybe why some of these phrases have changed over time.
Yep.
It's like playing telephone. It's like you hear something different. Yep. And ta and da are very similar.
And depending on how you heard it or the context of where you've heard it.
Yeah.
But another common one that like always when people call a wheelbarrow.
Yes. I actually made that mistake like last week. I was saying, she got a wheelbarrow for Christmas or something like that. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Wheelbarrow.
Yeah. Foliage.
Yes.
Is another one.
Oh, it's like conspiracy theories.
Yeah. It's like when customers come in and they're like, oh, hi, can you show me where your dirt is?
Yeah.
I don't want to correct them because nobody really wants to be corrected. And it's not that big of a sin where it's like, oh, no, you are so wrong. But I won't use the expression. I use the correct term back. So if people are like, oh, where are your wheelbarrows? I'll be like, oh, we have quite a few wheelbarrows.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I walk them down to
it. It's an approachable.
And then they're probably like, oh, my God, did he ever screw that word up? He's meant to work here and he doesn't know it's wheelbarrow. Even the price sign is wrong.
Goes home. Guess what this guy at the garden center said.
Wheelbarrow. Oh, my God. I hope somebody gets a hold of him and nips it in the butt.
Oh, my gosh. I really hope I'm not alone in that. Yeah. I hope other people have totally said to nip it in the butt because that's going to make me feel better. Next one up is salad days. Don't tell me. You've heard of this one?
Yeah, salad.
I've never heard of this one.
Yeah, salad days. Okay, as far as I know, means like those warm summer, carefree, blissful days. It's a very positive term. And it means like kind of like, those carefree summer days where you're lounging around in the fields and by the pool and just having fun.
Can you use it in a sentence, though?
The salad days of 5 years ago pre-COVID were amazing.
Oh, see, that's so weird. Like, I've never thought about that before.
Yeah, I would assume it comes from a salad being a very light, carefree meal that isn't very heavy and doesn't require a ton of work. It's like one bowl and you've got your salad and you eat it and it's delicious and it's healthy and it's fresh and it's light. And that equates to the day.
Yeah.
Did I get that right too?
You know, it's interesting. So it says one's days of youth and inexperience. So not necessarily, I mean, I'm sure it could, in by extension, be related to like summer days and like those carefree and everything. Because I mean, the days of youth and inexperience are pretty much carefree, right? So I would say that's a point in that direction. This is sort of one that's kind of gone away and then come back. It comes from the Shakespeare play called Antony and Cleopatra.
Okay.
And the phrase goes, "My salad days when I was green in judgment." And it wasn't used again for a couple hundred years. I've heard more people say they're pretty green or this person's pretty green, like inexperienced.
I haven't heard that term decades. Really? I don't think I've ever heard anybody use it in Canada.
Really?
Yeah. And I came to Canada in 89.
Okay.
And I don't believe I've heard anybody use it. It is very much an older term used in England. And I would be amazed if you went to England and used it, if the younger generation had a clue what you were talking about.
Do you think they'd know more about, like, if I was to say that phrase, like, that person is very green, that they would understand that more?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah. I've heard people say, like, when you're talking about a novice or a rookie at a job, and they're like, yeah, they're greener than grass.
Yeah. Oh, that's another one. Yeah. There you go. They're greener than grass.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah. Interesting. Next one is seed bunny.
Seed bunny.
No. Seed money.
I prefer seed bunny.
Seed bunny.
Okay, so seed money, if I'm right, is an expression to mean kind of the beginning venture capital to start a new project.
Yes.
And I would say it comes from especially if you go back before when we talked about this, oh boy, last year when you were talking about like when houseplants started coming around, there weren't garden centers, there weren't nurseries. If you wanted a plant, you grew that plant. Mm-hmm. So in order to have a garden, before you would have your garden, you had to have your seed money to buy the seeds for that. You had to plant your tomatoes and your cucumbers and your shrinking violets and whatnot. So I would say the expression carried over from starting a garden with your seed money to starting any venture, you would need seed money to start that.
Yes, it is that relationship between, plants grown from seed and also businesses grown from that initial funding, which is much like a seed.
I have never heard that expression ever used outside of the world of commerce and business.
Exactly.
Like ever. I thought it was a business term. I didn't think it actually stemmed from anything gardening. I just thought it was like, oh, it was a business term. That's where it came from. Like,
yeah, I mean, it would make sense, right? If that was where
hedge
it started.
Fund. Did people used to bury their money under hedges?
Oh, I didn't look up hedge fund. We needed to do a part two. Where does a hedge fund come from? We should look into
exactly, because hedge fund has always made me be like, where does that come from? Is it hedging your bets?
Oh yeah, hedging your bets.
Right, hedging your bets. I would say because hedging your bets is kind of you're betting on the Super Bowl and you bet that both teams are going to win.
Yeah.
And I would say because I'd say hedging your bets is kind of like sitting on the fence.
Oh, there's another one.
Because hedging your bet is a property divider and the hedge is kind of on both sides of the property. So when you're hedging your bet, you're playing both sides. Mm-hmm. When you're sitting on the fence, you're not taking a side.
Yeah.
So I would say that's where it comes from. But again, I'm just literally rattling stuff off
there's
the top
so
of my head.
There's so many though, right? There are so many phrases and a lot of them are inspired by nature and the gardens.
Yep.
It's really interesting.
I still want to address seed bunny. Though.
No, we're not talking about seed bunnies.
Are we going to nip that in the butt?
I actually thought seed money was like, oh yeah, like here's your allowance for seeds. Like, because I guarantee you there's gardeners across the country who are like, in the budget, this is for my seed money.
Oh, 100%.
You know? Yeah. Okay, next one, talking about hedges, to beat around the bush.
Okay, to beat around the bush means not getting to the point.
Yeah.
Doing everything you can and, again, using your flowery language to not get to the point. Where that comes from? Ooh.
Yeah, where would that come from?
Okay, so, like, it's a term, like, you beat around the bush to scare animals out of it. But, I mean, that's almost like you're getting to the point. So, I can't imagine it derives from there. I would say beating around the bush is you're beating all of the area around it, but you're not actually working on the bush itself, as in pruning it or trimming it. So you're not doing the job that is needed. You're doing a lot of effort to avoid doing the main job, which is pruning or cutting back the bush or something like that.
See, that would be very interesting, but I think your first guess was closer too.
Oh, no!
I know. So it actually comes from medieval hunting. It references the act of beating bushes to rouse birds so hunters could hunt them.
But then, okay, so if I'm beating the bush to scare out the birds, then yeah. I can hunt the bird.
Yes.
I'm doing something actively to get to the point.
Yeah.
But beating around the bush means avoiding getting to the point.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You should go back in time.
I got, was that Henry VIII too?
I got
words for that guy.
Medieval.
Yeah.
Well, is Henry VIII medieval?
Yeah. I would say he was medieval.
What classifies medieval?
I have no idea, but I would put him there. Something a long time ago.
Who can we call?
Exactly. Like, I know certain terms, but I have no idea. Like the paleontology era, the Cretaceous era. I know it means dinosaurs, but I don't know what the time limit is.
Yeah, no. So next up is cherry picker.
Okay. So cherry picking. Really, to me, cherry picking... It could be a good thing, but it's often used kind of like, oh, that person cherry picks their information.
Ah.
And it's where you get some information and you only take the snippets that suit your bias or something along those lines. I would say it comes from when you go out to a cherry tree, you're cherry picking. Well, obviously you're picking the ripest and nicest and best ones for yourself. And then the other ones that... Yeah, maybe they're not the prettiest or they're not fully ripe yet. You're like, nah, I'll leave them. And you're only taking the good ones.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. So choosing only the best people or things or information, but in an unfair manner. And this one, Merriam-Webster actually cites the first usage of this term in 1965 as a British nautical term.
A nautical term. Okay.
Denoting an inferior seaman who would pick or choose the easiest tasks, like someone picking the best fruit from a bowl of cherries or the cherry off the top of a piece of cake.
Oh, wow. Not even off the tree.
But it's interesting, right? Because like that's just one source.
Yeah.
And what I'm finding with all of these phrases.
And that's pretty modern too.
Exactly. That's exactly what I thought. I'm like, what do you mean people haven't been using this for?
Yeah. Like I would have thought like I would have blamed Henry VIII.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, exactly. He's nothing but trouble.
I mean, but that's exactly what I mean. It's like, you know, how many of these started off with. Maybe this wasn't the first time it was used. Maybe it has evolved in time.
Exactly. Maybe the guy who used it, that was the first time it was recorded, but he'd heard it from somebody.
Exactly.
And he transitioned it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But then again, all phrases have to start somewhere.
It's true.
And maybe that was it. I don't believe it.
Yeah. And actually to go along with that, our final one, number 10, is to gild the lily.
I have heard the expression, to be honest with you. I don't really know what it means. I would say... a gilded lily is something very beautiful, but at the same time, maybe it's like a little bit worthless because there's not really much substance to it. And I would say it's the idea behind taking a beautiful flower, such as a lily, and gilding it, which means to cover it in gold. And you covered this gorgeous flower in gold and it is beautiful, but inherently it's somewhat worthless. It's a gilded lily.
Yeah. I mean, you took it a lot further than I did for sure. It's decorating something that's already ornate, which is exactly what you're saying. Okay. So you're decorating something that's already beautiful.
Yep. With that being said, if somebody gave me a lily covered in gold, I would accept it. I'd be like, oh, that is beautiful. I'm going to melt the gold off it.
Oh my gosh. Bye-bye, Lily.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting because the meaning was actually credited to Shakespeare. And this is where it gets interesting because the phrase has actually changed over time. The original phrase is from the play called King John, and it goes to gild refined gold, to paint the lily, to throw a perfume on the violet.
The shrinking violet.
Is wasteful and ridiculous excess.
Ah, okay.
So the popular phrase is actually a misquotation, but it's so rooted in culture that that's how we use it. So it's actually to gild refined gold, to paint the lily, to throw a perfume on the violet. And that's wasting.
Yeah. So it's a lot of effort, wasteful effort for things that didn't need it.
Yeah, exactly. But it's never, it shouldn't have been to gild the lily. It should be to paint the lily.
Interesting.
So it's a lot more, it's like, you know, like that saying in retail where it's like the customer's always right, but that's not the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing here where it's like, it's way more expanded than that.
Yeah. Well, another one I heard, I don't remember the whole expression. Money is the root of all evil.
Oh, yeah.
That's not the whole expression.
Oh, it's not?
No, there's more to it than that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Which explains it. The love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves with many sorrows.
Ah.
So it's the love of money.
Yeah the love of money, not greed. Money in total. Yeah. It's what we do with the money.
Exactly. Or what we strive for, where like how many people want to be rich or get rich fast. That's why there's so many things about like, oh, turn your wealth around and do all of this.
Yeah.
But it's nigh on impossible, and that's what it is. Money is not the root of all evil. The love of money and why you covet it is the root of all evil.
Ah, see, this is what I love about etymology.
Yeah.
You know, we get the history of where words and phrases come from, and then we see how culture changes it, shortens it, changes the meaning of it. So I don't know. I really loved this episode.
And it's interesting, too, because like salad days, the one at the beginning that I'm not going to say again because I'm taking it out of my lexicon. Yeah,
and maybe a lot of these are rooted from gardening and plants and everything. And just
why would a sailor say cherry pick? He's a sailor. Why would he not say picking the best fish out of the net?
What about, is there vitamin C in cherries? No, because if you were to get scurvy, it would be oranges, right?
So here's a good one for you.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of the expression, and being English, I have heard it a lot, limey, as an expression for somebody English?
No.
Okay, so a term, some may call it derogatory. I've never taken offense to it at all. And that actually comes from back in the day when the English had the largest navy and they were going around the world. Scurvy was a major problem.
Yeah.
Limes are the fruit with the densest vitamin C that lasts the longest before it goes bad. So when the sailors arrived at tropical shores, one of the jobs was to go to the market and buy all of the limes they could find. They would keep that on board. Every sailor every day would have to eat one lime. So all of these people would see the British boats come in and they'd say, the limeys are here because they were coming to buy all of the limes.
Yeah.
And that is where that expression came from, because limes will outlast lemons. They'll outlast oranges and they keep their freshness longer. And that was why the British used them. Limes don't naturally grow in England. Like there's no, and I don't know a lot of English people to this day who are like, I will have a lime. I mean, English eat a lot of weird stuff. Our cuisine isn't the best.
Now, if you go to Barbados, lime is huge because you always, so you have like
a lime in the coconut.
No, you have a rum and coke and then you squeeze some lime juice in it and then you stir it with your finger and then you put the lime inside and then that's your rum and coke.
Yeah. You know, it's really good. Spiced rum and cherry coke.
Oh yeah. I've tried that. That's really good.
Yeah. But,
do you have a nickname? I don't have a nickname.
I did when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was little, I have no idea where it came from. My nickname was Wally.
Wally.
Yeah, W-A-L-L-Y. And I don't know if it was like Colin, Collie, Wally.
Maybe. That would be cute.
If it just got there somehow, I don't know. But yeah, my nickname was Wally. I did have a nickname.
Mine is Brandy Bean.
Yep, Brandy Bean.
Brandy Bean after those Brandy Beans.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nope. Harry's nickname used to be Stinky. Jimmy. There we go. We'll go back to Jimmy. Jimmy has so many nicknames.
What?
Yeah. The most common one he gets. So Jimmy's actual real name is James.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he's black and white.
Yeah.
And the soccer team I support, the football team, is Newcastle. Their colors are black and white.
Yeah.
And the stadium they play in is St. James's Park.
Oh, so James comes from that.
Exactly. And then we're like, well, we're not going to call him James.
Yeah.
So we give him the slang name for James, which is Jimmy. Mm-hmm. And the name he goes by now is The Chimp.
What?
Chimbe.
What is
that? C-H-I-M-B-E. It was Jimbe. It just developed. And then the best name from that, Harry calls him, is Jimothy.
Jimothy.
I love that name. Harry calls him Jimothy. He's like, oh yeah, come on, Jimothy.
Well, the hypothetical question of the week is kind of along that whole like gardening phrases route. If okay. weeding out negativity involved an actual garden, which plant would be the best at eliminating negative vibes and how would it do so?
So where my brain went immediately when you asked that question in a massive dose of irony
yeah.
is a plant that is causes a lot of negative vibes and is considered a weed, and it's the dandelion.
Oh, yeah.
They make me happy every year.
Yeah.
They're the first flower, they're bright, they're yellow, the bumblebees love them.
Yeah.
However, I get it. Most people don't dig them. So if I had to pick another one, I am going to go still in the same vein, and I'm going to pick early spring, especially in northern climates where we have a hard winter and it's brown and it's gray and it's white and we're just like, ugh, I need something. And when you get that first flush of flowers, I'm going to pick the one that I always love to see, which is the prairie anemone, often known as the prairie crocus, mm-hmm. because they come up and if there's snow, they're no shrinking violet.
It's true. Yeah. Whenever you see one of those in the springtime, it immediately evokes happiness.
Exactly. You're like, excitement. Spring is here.
Yeah.
It's like stamped. Yeah. Like, it's not like, is it spring? Is it second winter? What's going on here? So my choice would be the dandelion. I know that's not for everybody, but I have never heard anybody be like, I hate the prairie crocus.
Yeah, yeah.
So prairie crocus is my choice.
Wasn't it the lawn cell that was like the happy cell?
Oh, yeah. The grass.
Wasn't it?
Grass?
Yeah. Like if you were to look at a grass, a single strand of grass under a microscope, you would see it actually looks like smiley faces.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's a wicked choice. Yeah. I love it.
You know, I actually went and Googled the most positive flower and it said yellow tulips. There's sunshine in your smile.
Yep.
Perfect flower to convey tulips. Happiness.
Jenny loves tulips. My mom loves daffodils. Yeah. But here's the thing, right? If you had to pick the plant that would get rid of negativity, I don't think you could pick one for everybody, but I think everybody has one.
Grass.
You're like, I already picked it, Colin. It's grass.
Actual happy faces yeah. in the lawn.
They smile. but sunflowers always make me happy.
Oh, there's another good one.
Yeah.
And they're a big presence, too.
Exactly. Like, they're like, just like, look at me. Don't be sad. I'm big and I'm yellow.
And I bring all the bees to the yard.
Exactly. Like. My sunflower brings all the bees to the yard. They're like, I'm better than y'all. I don't know how that song goes. That's ironically, a milkshake would also bring bees. Actually, it would probably bring more wasps.
Yeah, probably.
My milkshake brings all the wasps to the yard, and they're like, I'm going to sting you, boy. I'm going to nip it in the butt.
You won't let me live that down after today.
You know what? I'm gonna actually start using nip it in the butt instead of nip it in the bud, because I haven't thought of that in so long. And I'm bringing it back.
There you go. Well, I mean, that wraps us up for this week. If you're listening on Spotify, make sure to give us your perspective on our polls and question of the week. What do you think is the happiest flower in the garden? You can also leave us an anonymous voicemail there over on Spotify as well. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram like Holly did earlier this week. Golden Acre Garden is where you can find us there. You can also send us an email, info@goldenacre.ca. Just put like podcast somewhere in the subject line and then we'll catch it. And I mean, next week, I'm really excited because we're getting back into some indoor growing topics, starting with microgreens.
Love my, you know what? I always say, if you have an activity, it's cold outside, it's snowy outside, you want to do something with your kids, microgreens are the way to go. They grow fast, they grow easy, they're delicious, tons of variety, and then you get your kids to eat the vegetables. It's a win-win.
Exactly. I'm excited to learn all about it. So we'll catch you next weekend.
Bye, everyone.